Welcome to Marketing Thought Leadership, the podcast that offers insightful discussions on thought-provoking marketing topics. Here's the host of our show, marketing consultant, speaker, author, and educator, and the president of Leverage 2 Market Associates, Linda Popke.
Hi, this is Linda Popke, and welcome to our latest episode of Marketing Thought Leadership. We're here today with Alex Goldfing. He's the CEO of the Revenue Growth Consultancy, which creates average annual revenue growth of 10 to 20% for their clients. And about once a week, he delivers keynote speeches, sales kickoffs, breakout sessions, and workshops for various associations and companies around the country. The topic is sales growth, but he also dives deeply into confidence instead of meekness, proactivity instead of reactivity, and optimism instead of pessimism. He's the author of the Wall Street Journal bestseller, Selling Boldly, which was published in early 2018, and The Revenue Growth Habit, which has been selected as one of the top 15 business books of the year by Forbes. So welcome, Alex.
Thank you, Linda. Thanks for having me.
Ah, that's wonderful to have you here. I always want to talk to people who want to help us sell more and close more customers and be more successful. So let's talk about the new book, which is Selling Boldly. Aren't people selling boldly to start with? What's wrong with the way people are selling today? It seems to me if you're going to be out selling, you've got to be bold. You can't be meek or you won't get any sales.
So, Linda, when do people call? When do we tend to hear from customers? When they're happy?
When they're not, right?
Right. Most people pick up the phone when something's wrong or they have a problem or they need something urgently. And so most salespeople, inside or outside, most people in management tend to spend 100% of our time talking to the 10% of customers who need something or have a problem. And so we begin to believe that we don't do very good work because we tend to talk about negative things all the time. And people don't like us very much because we tend to talk to people who are complaining all the time or that people just don't like us, right? We just don't do good. But those are just the 10%. The other 90% are quiet.
Right.
So the default position, mindset position, tends to be to sell fearfully, fearful of annoying the customer, fearful of rejection, fearful of losing the customer, fearful of just getting a no, which we try to avoid because we spend our days being yelled at or dealing with unpleasant things that customers bring to us. So that's the long answer to your question. The short answer to your question is that most of us operate sort of from an automatic position of fear, and it happens so quickly we don't even know it's happening. We don't even notice it happening. It's subconscious.
Interesting. That's interesting. So, and fear is really driving, gee, maybe I'm afraid I don't have enough money or I haven't closed enough business or, you know, I need to, maybe the customer will go somewhere else. So how do we get by that? Because if that's the greatest enemy of sales, how do we blow away that fear if it's so unconscious and so much a part of who we are?
Well, you have to talk to the happy customers. And,
okay.
We have to go to them because they don't come to us.
Right.
If they're good, they're quiet. There's no reason to call you. They're busy.
Sure.
They've got other suppliers that they're having problems with, right? That's a guarantee.
Yep.
Because of that, nothing's ever perfect always. So they don't call. It's like when you go to the restaurant and the waiter or waitress is screwing up and we don't have our drink in 20 minutes, we call the manager over and we complain. But when the waiter or waitress is doing very well, we don't call the manager over. We might tip quietly.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't proactively compliment. So we have to go to the happy customers and ask them specifically what it is they're happy about, and they will tell us. When you ask people, they actually tell you what their favorite things are about working with you. Nobody will ever say, no, I'd rather not share my opinion with you. I'd rather not tell you what's on my mind. Everybody loves telling you what's on their mind, if only we ask. It's just that we don't because of fear. We're afraid to because we don't want to hear something negative.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things I do in my business is I interview my clients, customers, because maybe they're afraid of it or they don't want to do it or they don't have the time. But I find if I call up and say, you know, Alex asked me to contact his customers to see what do you like about them, they'll talk for hours. Is there a reason that we're afraid to ask our own customers directly, that we kind of feel we need to put someone in the middle?
It's all the same thing, Linda.
It's the same thing, yeah.
We're afraid that they're going to tell us something that they don't like, something that, you know, we think these are happy customers, but what if they don't like me as much as I think they do?
Right.
Or hope they do. And we're also afraid of upsetting them, right? We're upset of frustrating them. We're upset of them saying, no, I don't have time for this right now. We're afraid of being rejected. We're afraid of annoying them. We're afraid of losing them as a customer. If I ask them what they're happy about, if I ask them what's working, then they will leave me forever. Now, we
that
don't.
That sounds so silly when you say it, but, you know, I'm sure this
so
is what we're all thinking.
Yeah. It sounds so silly, and like, and then, you know, if they reject me, then I will die immediately, right?
Right.
Or they will come and take my house right away because in our
children
heads,
won't love me,
that.
And you know, that's it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, and the children won't have milk to drink in the morning if
the
customer rejects me for this thing.
Exactly.
And it happens so automatically that we rarely even notice that it's happening. But you know, fear is the reason why we don't pick up the phone instead of sending an email.
Yep.
Fear is the reason we don't ask for the business every time we talk to a prospect. Fear is the reason we don't ask for testimonials and referrals, which is really what you and I are talking about right now, is asking for testimonials on the phone qualitatively and then talking about it.
Yep. So how do we get past that fear? You talk about that there's 10 critical mindset shifts that really help our sales grow dramatically. Can you talk about a few of those? Where do we start to kind of get past that fear?
So, well, we're talking about the way to get past it, which is, you know, the fuel for dealing with the fear comes from happy customers talking about what they like and enjoy and appreciate about working with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing that moves you past fear. But then there are some sort of parallel and concurrent mindset shifts that happen, which you just mentioned. And so, for example, when we operate fearfully, we sell reactively.
Mm.
When we operate boldly, we sell proactively. And so reactive selling is the customer calls in, the customer has a request or, you know, asks about a product or a service, and we react to it. And that's what we sell. And we are simply responding to what's incoming.
Yep.
And the vast majority of salespeople, inside and outside, are reactive salespeople. The problem with operating that way is you are totally at the mercy of what's incoming. And so if the right inquiries come in, you might grow that year. But if the wrong inquiries come in, you won't grow, and it's not up to you at all.
Right.
And so when we sell proactively, we do some of these things. We offer our customers with intention, intentionally. We offer them additional products and services. We tell them what else we can do for them. We ask them what else it is that they're buying elsewhere that we can help them with.
Uh-huh.
We make a little plan that takes 3 minutes of who to call this week or today. We pick up the phone and make some outgoing phone calls instead of just sending emails and waiting for things to come in. And a proactive call is, Linda, I was just thinking about you. How's your family? How's your daughter? What are you working on these days that I might be able to help you with?
Yeah.
So
it's very simple.
A proactive call is not, it's all very simple.
Yeah.
Right? It's incredible. It's intentionally extremely simple. Because if there was any complexity to it at all, salespeople would resist it. They wouldn't do it.
Right. You talk about confidence versus fear. And I presume once we start getting in and talking to happy customers, confidence comes from knowing that they're not going to shoot you and they want to hear you. But how do you kind of conquer that fear to start with and get the confidence to make that first phone call?
Once again, you know, again and again and again, we keep coming back to you listen to the positive and emotional feedback of your customers, because they speak more positively about you than you speak about yourself.
Yeah, amazing.
If you put yourself in front of a prospect and you put a customer in front of a prospect, the customer will sell you better than you sell yourself. They'll outsell you for your own stuff, for your own product or service. So the confidence doesn't come from sitting down at your desk and writing down why you're awesome, because that's kind of weird and creepy, and it doesn't work very well. The confidence comes from, at first, hearing from happy customers. And then, after that, the confidence comes from doing some of these proactive actions, doing some of this work, some of these multi-second efforts, like the did you know question or the reverse did you know question, or asking for referrals or asking for the business or following up on quotes and proposals, doing some of this work and then succeeding with it.
So success breeds success.
Yeah, at first you pay attention to what you're doing well, because your customers are telling you about it, and if they're telling you about it, it's the truth. And then after that, we focus on the positivity of the outcomes, the successes that you create. And you look at what you've done, and you look at the direct results and the direct successes, and hopefully you want to do it a little bit more. You want to do a little more of those efforts and actions.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. Now, one of the things you talk about is perseverance versus surrender. And I know that there are people, we all do this, or someone says, no, I'm not interested, or I'm not available. And we go, okay, fine, cross them off the list. How do you know how much to persevere versus becoming kind of an irritant in their side? You know, when do we become too much and we become spam, so to speak, versus persevering successfully?
Well, there's different kinds of things to persevere on, right? And so I guess the answer depends on the customer and on the opportunity and on the sale, but Thomas Edison said that many of life's failures are people who did not realize how close they were to success when they gave up.
Oh, interesting.
So you never know when the next or if the next step is going to be the one that results in success. And so I say to salespeople, look, if you've already been rejected 8 times by this person, a 9th rejection is literally no worse. It's the same.
Right.
It's, to go from 8 to 9 or 11 to 12, it's the same. So who cares? You know, it's not our job to quit and give up. It's our job to keep trying to help this person. And so that's what we do.
But you can't help people who don't want to be helped. So isn't there a time when you say, hey, I've called 8 or 9 times. Let me help someone else who might be a little bit more eager for my call?
Yeah. So obviously we use judgment, and we, you know, discern who the prospects that are still alive and opportunities that are still alive versus opportunities that we feel are long shots, and you triage things. But you know, Martin Seligman is widely acknowledged as the founder of positive psychology, and he says that in his research. And perseverance is a big positive psychology component, as all of these mindsets are that we're talking about here, because the book is really kind of builds a selling process on positive psychology, on the field of positive psychology and the research of that field, my book, Selling Boldly. But Seligman said that perseverance is 2/3 of the equation to success, and talent is only 1/3. So you can be the most talented damn salesperson on the planet, but if you give up on the first no, you will be outperformed by the person that doesn't and who's less talented than you.
Yeah.
And that's what you see. If you look at, you know, your favorite sports team, I know you're into sports.
Yep.
If you look at your, you know, anybody listening, pick a team that you like, college or pro or even high school. There is always somebody who is less talented outperforming somebody who's more athletic, who's faster, who's stronger, who's better, naturally more gifted, right? But there's always somebody who's worked harder, who hasn't given up, who's out-persevered this person, doing better. And in NFL football, the perfect example of this is Tom Brady.
Sure.
Who's probably one of the least naturally talented players, not just quarterbacks, players in the whole NFL for his entire career. He's probably one of the slowest quarterbacks in football. he came into the league as one of the weakest in terms of strength. And yet he's, a five-time Super Bowl champion, a six-time league MVP, quite possibly the greatest player that's ever played the game.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
And with you know, talent, natural talent, that's probably in the bottom 20% of the league, which is fascinating.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about that before because, you know, we think of him, we see him, he's at the head of the Patriots, they keep winning, and you think, wow, okay, he's always been that way. But you're right. Starts out and not necessarily the most talented guy on the field. So
yeah, he used his brain, and then he outworked everybody. I just want to say one last thing. Have you ever seen his draft photo?
No.
In the year 2000 when he got picked. So, firstly, he was picked in the sixth round.
Wow.
Of the NFL draft. So every team in the league passed him over five times.
Wow.
At least, right? And half the teams passed him over six times.
Yep.
And his draft photo, he's standing there in his boxer shorts, and he looks like a frat boy who's never lifted a weight in his life. You know, he just, I mean, he's got like a dad body. Like, I have a similar body to that Tom Brady draft photo. It's like there's no muscle, and there's just this, like, unhappy, sort of gawky dude, and he's become the best, one of the best ever.
Wow. Impressive. So there's hope, Alex, you and I can get drafted still. We can work on it.
Yeah, no, there's certainly not hope for me there, but there's
okay.
Hope elsewhere.
There's
hope that work and perseverance can bring you to.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things you talk about in the book, you talk about some powerful actions we can take for sales growth. And I'd like to just go through a couple of these because I think they might be helpful to the folks listening. You talk about silence is money. What do you mean by that?
I mean, ask a question and let the other person answer it without your nervous chatter getting in the way of that.
Linda,
who do you know like yourself who would benefit from working with me the way that you do?
And then you sit and wait for me to answer. You don't kind of go on and on and on and on. Yep.
I'm going to blink or breathe or stare, or if we're in person, I'm going to maybe turn around and walk in the other direction a little bit. Or look at my phone while you think.
Yep.
But I'm not going to be the first to talk because you haven't been thinking about my referral until I asked.
Right.
I've been thinking about asking you for this referral possibly for weeks or months, and I finally got myself around to doing it. But you haven't been thinking about it. And so many times we take silence as an indicator of, you know, displeasure or annoyance or frustration, when in fact the other person is simply thinking. And so we have to let them think. Another use of silence is ask for the business and do not speak until you get an answer, right? How many would you like? How would you like to pay? When can I expect the PO? And then, sing the ABCs in your head if you have to. Sing whatever you have to sing in your head, but don't talk.
Yeah. We have a need to kind of try and fill that silence, don't we? I think in this world where everything happens so quickly, you get 30 seconds of silence and it feels like forever.
Because of fear. Because we're afraid of why they might be silent, and we're afraid it's because they don't like us or we've annoyed them, and then we might lose them, and then we might lose the house, and then we might die. Because the person is being silent. See?
Yeah.
See what happened?
Comes
back around.
Around fear.
Fear drives behavior.
Yeah. And when you put this out there and you say it and we kind of shed some light on it, it sounds ridiculous, but I know we've all done it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Tell me about using the phone proactively. Is that just making phone calls rather than waiting for people to come to you?
I think it's the proactive phone call is kind of going the way of the BlackBerry and the, you know, TiVo and these things that have gone away. So it used to be that the phone was all we had and everybody would use the phone. Well, now we have a phone and lots of other things, including email and text messaging and social media and other things. And so we've sort of as a profession, as a sales profession, we've stopped using the phone nearly as much as we used to. That's not a very elegant way of saying it. We don't use the phone nearly as much as we used to. It's a better way of saying
it.
And we shy away from the phone because a rejection on the telephone is intimate and it goes into my ear, right?
Right.
A rejection by email tends to be silence. They don't usually reply when it's a rejection. So I'm still alive. It's still in play, right? They haven't told me no. I don't really want to, you know, push them towards the no. So I kind of, it stays quiet. And anyway, it's not as intimate. And so we avoid the phone because the thing we are afraid of, which is rejection, via the telephone is a lot closer. It's a lot more personal. And we think that everybody is calling. And the truth is that nobody's calling. Almost nobody is calling. Everybody's afraid of the phone. I had a client say to me recently, there was a new president and one of his suppliers, and my client is the CEO of a $200 million distributor. Mm-hmm. And his supplier called him on the phone, on a cell phone. And I said, how was that? He goes, we had a great talk. And I said, were you mad that he called you on a cell phone? He goes, no. And in these words, Linda, he said, it was the first time anybody's ever called me on that damn thing.
Huh. Interesting.
And so we think everybody's calling. And in fact, nobody's calling. Everybody's afraid. And so if you want to stand out, which is the point, point of all of this, it's designed to make you, to separate you from the competition. If you want to stand out, use the phone. Be present. Show people that you care. We're not annoying or bothering them. We're showing them. We're demonstrating interest.
Yeah.
And when you demonstrate interest, you kind of become singular because most people don't. And customers will literally thank you with their money. They will be so impressed because you will be one of the only ones. And that's all people want from us. They just want to know that you won't screw them up.
Yep.
So by being present, by showing that you care, you will be different than everybody else, and they will thank you with their money.
That's wonderful. You have another technique, which I tell my clients as well, and I think it's also going the way of the dodo bird, which is handwritten notes. We tend to just either send something over email or text, but we don't sit and write a note. And I find that when we do that, people are really impressed that you took the time to write a note and stick it in the old-fashioned U.S. Postal Service.
I hear from almost everybody that I send a note to, and they tell me how nice it is and how long it's been they got a note. And the key with handwritten notes is to make them human notes, not thank you notes.
Right.
So most people say, thanks for meeting with me. Thanks for taking the time. I don't say that. I say I think about what we talked about, and I talk about that. So I think about kids or family or sports or hobbies or a trip they're taking or how they took their son or daughter to college and dropped them off, and I'll ask about that. So I think about something we talked about, and that's what I write about in my handwritten notes. And when you do it that way, people will almost always respond to that.
Excellent. Great idea. And there's so many more of these. I mean, it's just so much fun. And I'd love to go on and on and on. But maybe you could tell us if there's one way that we could start by – I presume even thinking about the fear is a way to start. But when you start with a client who hasn't done most of this, where do you tell them to start? I know you tell them to call a happy customer. But is there something else they need to do to change the mindset even to get to call the customer?
Well, there's two things, and you've said one of them, which is call the customer and ask them what some of their favorite things are about working with you, and they'll tell you, and then you'll say, wow, that's – first of all, they told me. Secondly, they weren't upset that I asked. Thirdly,
right.
I'm actually this good. This is what I do for people. I should do more of it.
Yeah.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is you got to do stuff. You know, you can't just think about doing stuff because everything we talk about here – so far, and you know, if we talked for 2 hours, it would still be this way. There's nothing here. There's nothing in my book, and it says so on the back cover in really big letters. It says you already know what to do. There's nothing that I'm talking about here that people don't already know.
Right.
You know that phone calls are better than email. You know that testimonials and referrals are a good way to do business and grow business. But knowing things and doing things are two different things. We know a lot of things that we don't do.
Yep.
And knowing doesn't make us a dollar. It's the doing that makes the money. So the second thing I would say in response to your question of how do you start by taking some action. And many of these actions are 2 or 3 second actions. You know, ask a did you know question, ask a reverse did you know question. What else do you need? What else do you buy that I can help you with? And so take some action.
So it sort of doesn't matter where you start. Just do something.
It doesn't matter at all. You know, and the rule of thumb is 36 hours, and you probably know this. If after learning something, you don't implement it within 36 hours, this is the science that tells us this, if you don't do something within 36 hours of learning, it is gone forever. It's like you never learned it. It's gone. So we have to take action. And so, as you said, it doesn't matter. I don't care what people do. I don't even care if it's my thing or somebody else's thing. I just care that you take some action, for God's sake, that you take some that you try to help some more people some more. And, again, if we do that, business has no choice but to grow because
that's
work.
Fantastic.
You're just helping people in amazing ways.
Okay. So – the people listening to this, if they within the next 36 hours want to take an action and want to find out more about this, where should they go?
So you can go to my website, which is goldfayn.com, goldfayn.com, and you can see what happens there. And you could download some of these Selling Boldly planning tools where you can kind of plan who to call. Plan out your did you know questions. I have a referral planner on there. So there's some pretty cool tools and forms there. Second, you can go to Amazon or wherever you buy books and buy a copy of Selling Boldly. It'll cost you $17 or $18. Cover price is $25. By the way, I make a dollar when you buy a book. So and get a copy of the book and go through it and then do something. Right. Implement something.
Excellent. Excellent. Fantastic. We've been talking here with Alex Goldfayn. Alex is the author of Selling Boldly, and he's got more tips than this than we have time to cover, but lots of things to think about, lots of things to start implementing. So, Alex, I want to thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Linda. I really appreciate you talking with me. Thank you.
This is Linda Popke. Until next time, thank you for listening to Marketing Thought Leadership.
We hope you enjoyed this edition of Marketing Thought Leadership, brought to you by Leverage 2 Market Associates. If you'd like to find out how powerful marketing results can transform your organization, contact us at www.leverage2market.com.